President Trump unveiled his tax reform plan yesterday during an event in Indianapolis, saying it will provide tax cuts to working class Americans.
Democrats and Republicans in Congress should come together, finally, to deliver this giant win for the American people and begin middle class miracle.
But Senate Majority Leader Chuck Schumer was one of many Democrats who said the plan would do just the opposite.
Under this plan, the wealthiest Americans and wealthiest corporations make out like bandits, while middle-class Americans are left holding the bag.
Here to help sort through this are Mike Greenwald, a partner at Friedman LLP in Corporate and Business Tax Practice, and Richard Schlombach, professor at Duke University Law School. Richard, let's start with the 9-page proposal is a broad outline with important details left to Congress to hash out. Without more details, is it difficult to know if middle-income families will see the most benefit, or rather the richest Americans?
Well, I think this is clearly a package of materials that has a lot of benefits for high-income taxpayers. It's not clear whether it has any benefits at all for middle- and lower-income taxpayers. The number of things that are unambiguously favorable to high-income and wealthy people, like repeal of the estate tax, the fact that pass-through entities, which would include medical and law partnerships, where you have a lot of income that's currently being taxed at 35 or 39.6%, the rates would be capped at 25%, a number of business enhancements that are going to make it more profitable to own and operate a business, and the businesses are mostly operated by relatively high income people. When you get down to the middle, there's going to be a doubling of the standard deduction, which is certainly helpful, but it's going to be largely offset by the suggestion that we would have no personal exemptions. So whether that helps you or hurts you depends on your family size. There's also a suggestion that there be an enhancement to the child credit, but that's one of the details that's still to be worked out. We don't know how much. If it's a substantial enhancement to the child credit, it could offset the loss of the personal exemptions. But without knowing the amount, you can't know that. What we don't see are things that really might help low and moderate income people, like reductions in the payroll taxes, enhancements to the earned income tax credit, and things of that sort.
And, Mike, do you agree with that analysis?
I absolutely agree, and I'd go, you know, one step further. There's the fact that, you know, we're going to reduce the progressivity of the overall individual tax system to three brackets, and that could very well be favorable to working people and lower middle income people, but we don't know where those brackets break out. So someone who's currently in the 10% bracket might find themselves moving up a little bit into what's now going to be a 12% bracket, and we just don't know where that move point is. I would say that, you know, the scorecard on this is really incomplete at this point, and the lack of specificity and the fact that so much is going to be left to Congress to work out, and with apparently very little time to do that, is troubling and makes it difficult to predict who wins and loses. But there's definitely going to be winners and losers.
Richard, the biggest deduction that would be eliminated is the one for state and local taxes, and that primarily hits people in blue states where taxes and often incomes are higher. Is that a move that's you think a Republican move to hit Democrats, or is that just something that ended up there?
I don't want to speculate too much on motives. It probably does have a differential impact according to whether the state has an income tax or not, and there are about six or seven that do not, including prominently Florida and Texas. But over 40 states do have state income taxes, so it's not the case that the state income tax deduction is exclusively a blue state feature. It's a sort of a disparate impact thing. It will affect blue state residents a little more than the average red state resident, but there are plenty of red state residents who would lose the value of that deduction as well.
Mike, what about the lowering of the corporate rate? Tell us a little bit about that. Mike?
Well, again, the the lack of specificity is a problem. We do currently have a graduated corporate tax structure as well. People don't often talk about that, but for small and mid-sized businesses, small and mid-sized corporations, they do have rates that are lower than the top 35% rate that's talked about. Plus, there's also a number of different credits and incentives and deductions that have been made available to businesses by Congress over the years that reduce the overall effective tax rate. So, again, without knowing what corporate deductions are going to be eliminated, there's a talk about special tax regimes for certain industries that are going to be modernized. So without knowing all these other specifics, yes, a 20% corporate tax rate clearly is lower than a 35%, but that's at the margin. We don't know what happens in getting to that number.
Richard, we just have about 30 seconds here, you can get started on the answer to this, which is what do you see in this as the biggest change?
The very substantial reduction in taxes on business. The cutting the top corporate rate from 35% to 20%, allowing for expenses of capital acquisitions, capping the pass-through tax rate on income from basically professional services and other limited partnership arrangements.
I've been talking with Professor Richard Schmalbeck of Duke University Law School and Mike Greenwald, a partner at Friedman LLP and the corporate and business tax practice leader, about President Trump's tax plan and how it may impact us. And part of the impact will be on an international scale. So, Mike, start with telling us a little bit about what the international impact will be.
Thanks. Right now, the U.S. technically taxes its multinational corporations on their worldwide earnings, but what's gotten a lot of publicity over the last few years is how very large companies are able to park much of their foreign earnings overseas without ever paying U.S. tax on it and still have the use of the money. What's on the last page of the 9-page proposal, there's talk about moving to what we call a territorial system where companies would just pay tax on the earnings that they have within the United States. So the question was always what to do about these offshore earnings, the offshore cash and assets. And originally we thought that what was going to come forward was going to be some kind of a voluntary system where there'd be a reduced rate available and companies could bring their earnings back and pay one-time tax on it, but it would be voluntary. The proposal appears to make it mandatory. The framework talks in terms of they're going to all be deemed as repatriated and that the tax would be collected at a reduced rate, but over a couple of years. And this looks to be one of the items in the framework that they're going to try to use as a pay for to cut down on the overall impact on the deficit of the both the corporate tax reduction in general and the move from worldwide to territorial taxation.
Richard, how do you analyze that last bit of this?
Well, similarly, I think it is a good idea not to have a tax holiday like we had about 12 years ago, which really didn't accomplish much of anything. So the idea of collecting some of that tax that's been accumulating in foreign subsidiaries is good. Again, we don't have much detail, so a lot depends on exactly how they go about that. But that's preferable, I think, to a tax holiday. Going forward from this point, it would exempt foreign earnings, and it's really hard to see how that would advantage American workers. It would put a multinational corporation in the position of saying, do I want to put a new facility in Ireland where the tax rate is 12.5% and I will never have to pay any additional American tax with respect to that? I'll just pay the 12.5% to Ireland and then we're home free. Or should I do it in Indiana and pay a 20% tax? It does help that the corporate rate is pushed down from 35 to 20. That narrows the difference between the U.S. rates and some of the lower rates that we see abroad. But it doesn't eliminate the difference. And if you're talking about billions of dollars of earnings, 12.5% is going to give you a big break over 20%. And why would you choose to put it in Indiana if you can put it in Ireland instead? So it's really hard to see how that is consistent with what his expressed views are about, restoring American jobs and stopping the exporting of American jobs.
And Mike, let's talk about that $2 trillion deficit from this bill over the next decade. Is there any indication from anyone about how that is going to be filled?
No, that's again one of those details. It's left to Congress, but I think it's interesting that somebody was able to do that math this quickly. I don't think I could have gleaned from what's in this 9 pages where that math comes from. But it makes a certain amount of sense to me in a macro way. I think that from my standpoint, I've been doing this a while. I was around for the Tax Reform Act of '86. Tax reform is tough. And it takes a lot of time, and especially when you're trying to make these kinds of massive changes without having too significant an impact on both the economy and the deficit that the government runs, it's going to take some time to figure out where to draw those additional revenues from. And I hope what it doesn't mean is that the amount of benefits available to most taxpayers winds up getting reduced from the original proposal.
So, Richard, we're down to about 30 seconds here. Will that stop fiscal conservatives from going with this plan, that $2 trillion?
It should. That's the sort of political question that's hard to know. There's a lot going on that complicates their lives. But I did want to add that I thought the $2 trillion was just a wild guess at this point. But what we do know is, as you look at these features, there are a lot of big revenue losers and not very many revenue gainers. So something is going to have to be done or the deficit will grow a lot. So how much they want to do is kind of up to them. And I think there'll be quite a bit of struggle within the Republican Party about that.
Seems like there's a lot of blank space yet in this plan. Thank you both for being on Bloomberg Law. That's Professor Richard Schmalbeck of Duke University Law School and Mike Greenwald, a partner at Friedman LLP.